Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro, and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show. I'm really excited tonight because we're going to hear some great tone, some great guitars, great amp gear, the whole shot. A very cool show. It's my honor to have Steve Pfister on the show. Welcome, Steve. Woo-hoo! It's nice. A pleasure to have you here. I'm going to start out and just play something of his, just to kind of give you a feel. This is one of my favorite clips. This is from his Live Bullets album, and we're going to talk about the gear and everything. But this, to me, is a classic tone that's just to die for. So this is a clip from Foolin' Me.
Bossley.
Pretty much defines it. There's nothing else I can say. That's just right there. Killer sound.
Thanks.
Just killer. And he was playing along with the clip. And my friend Henry Sedeas is here tonight with me, and we were talking about this when we were listening in the car. So how did he do that? Because it doesn't sound like tapping, but he's picking it. He's picking the whole thing. It was
Jeff,
pretty cool.
I haven't listened to that specifically here, I don't know, in quite a while. And I was just trying to remember,
what key is that sucker in? Okay, that's in. Okay, that's that. That was. So I got to refresh my memory back. Brought back a few flashbacks right there, I'll tell you.
That is very cool. Now let's, cool. let's get right down to the nitty gritty there. What were you using there?
On that particular tour, that record was recorded. It was 38 shows in a row in Europe, no days off. And we're talking UK, Benelux, Germany, Belgium. We even got to Holland. We got to Scandinavia. And we wound our way back around through Germany. And that was the 35th show in a row. And we were opening for the great Mr. Walter Trout.
Mm-hmm.
And unbeknownst to me on that particular date, that it was being recorded. The sound guy was a really cool guy, and we had no idea we really liked him. It was not until my next tour that we had been in touch, and he said, "Hey, I recorded the show, and it sounds pretty good." So I was just in the midst of getting a new record deal over there and, all the business stuff, this mm-hmm. and that. I got it. On the next tour, I started listening to it, and I said, "Oh, I think we got a record here." So came back to L.A., mixed it, signed a new record deal. That one was just for Europe. And there you go, live record, and it got to number two. We had a number two record. The only thing that beat us was major label money. This was a German independent label, and gave me a little bit of success and a nice taste, and I'm really this, grateful.
The whole album's really solid, and he's doing a lot of cool stuff. We're going to play some other clips from it. And was that when you were playing, and mm-hmm. where that one was actually recorded, was that a small room or a pretty good size? Did you have room on stage, or was it pretty tight?
Oh, it was tight. It was tight. It was probably, it was a 500-seater, and it was packed at two stories, and it was packed, people on top of people, and we were set up in front of Walter, and I had no idea there was a live record. And it's probably, had I known, who knows, I might have had to engage the clam filter. But I had no idea, And thank goodness. So it came out real nice. We had no fixes, no nothing. What you hear is what went
was
down.
Right there.
Yeah.
So what were you using on that?
That was my trusty 1975 Gibson ES-335 with a trapeze tailpiece.
Mm-hmm.
And the amp that I had been using that I had over in Europe, I used it on the first ton of tours, was a silver Jubilee Marshall, and the cabinet was a 4x12 with the 25 watt Celestion speakers. And I'll tell you, the settings were nothing special. Every night I put all three volume controls on 7. That was it.
Okay.
7. And then your typical Marshall EQ curve, and that was it.
But was that a 100 watt head?
100 watt head. Absolutely.
Okay, so you're really pushing it. Yeah, no, that's power tubes.
We move some air there,
That's true. No, that's a great sound, and it's interesting. In the album, you really have do a lot of feedback things, which is kind of cool with the 335. Really controlled. Was that difficult to do, or was it pretty?
Well, when I was back in the day, mind you, when I was playing with Lita Ford, we did a lot of support dates with Ted Nugent. And I remember Ted, he would always have tape marks, from where the feedback points were, And I never really took it that far. Like I was telling you earlier, I would try to get my particular tone mm-hmm. to where I could voice a four-note chord, a major seventh, something a little bit less rock and roll, and mm-hmm. make it defined, and then maybe hit a little bit of just the a volume boost
mm-hmm.
on a playing old TS-9 tube screamer, and that was a sound. It was really, the guitar in the hands.
So you're using, we were talking about this earlier, you're using the tube screamer more as an overall boost. You're not really dirtying it up Mm-mm. with the tube screamer. It's just pushing the...
That would only be used for solos. And, one thing that I always like doing is, I don't know, maybe coming from a different school or something, but there's so many different tones you can get just by varying your volume control.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be kind of the lost art these days with modeling this and modeling that. If you turn your volume control down a couple of notches and then you turn it up for the solos mm-hmm. and you get a little tone and you got to, hey, guess what? We got a switch here.
Mm-hmm.
Hear it? We got all these different tones and it all comes right here from your hand.
Yeah, the hand.
That's the thing. Simple.
Yeah. Now, let's go... give us a brief rundown on your influences. Where you, what you listen to, how you got to where you are in terms of musically. What were you into as a kid when you were starting out?
You know...
Or did you just listen to everything?
I listen to everything. I have the benefit of my older brother, who is really instrumental in my musical tastes. And he was always on the cutting edge of just whatever was progressive and whatever was good and just whatever was really happening. But the one particular influence that just absolutely floored me was Jeff Beck. Mm-hmm. And I think I was 13 years old, and I saw Beck Bogart in a piece in a small theater in Buffalo, New York, Fifth Row Center. I saw it, and as I recall, Fog had opened.
Yeah.
It's got a story about that.
I saw him at Long Beach.
Oh, my God.
I think Albert King opened for them.
Oh.
Or Freddie King, one of them. One of the Kings.
Either way, you can't lose.
It wasn't BB, though.
You can't lose, either way.
Oh, they were awesome.
But I can remember, just in my formative years, that after hearing that show, I came home and sat on the couch for 2 days. I couldn't believe it. And then fast forward to about, maybe 4 or 5 years ago when Mr. Beck played at the Greek Theater. And I did the same thing. I had to go home and sit on the couch for 2 days. So there you go. To me, there's a guy that keeps reinventing himself and is just playing better than ever and mm-hmm. just an awesome career. And there's a ton of influences. There's I love Bill Frisell. I love John Scofield. Derek Trucks, come on.
Yeah.
There's just so many great guitar players nowadays.
Yeah.
But I got to say, the top of the hill for me is Jeff Beck.
Jeff Beck.
Yeah. You can't lose.
It's funny. A friend of mine told me he was in the studio, and he saw Beck. Well, Beck was going to record. He wasn't there. And he saw this trash Strat. It was like falling apart. And that's the guitar he used, you know, on all of the stuff. Talk about in the hands.
Oh.
He's one of those guys that... You can give them anything, piece of plywood, and it'll sound great.
It'll sound great.
It'll sound really good. Well, okay, let's go into a little bit of the early groups. I know you had played with Steppenwolf, mm-hmm. and you had played with Lita Ford. What was your setup for them and your approach to do in terms of your tone and sound and all that? Did it change? Or, like with Steppenwolf, were you trying to emulate? Did they tell you how they did the original stuff? Did you have to, like, emulate that? Or were you pretty much allowed to do what you wanted to do?
You know... with John Kay in the Steppenwolf, it was a kind of thing where we're really straddling a line between trying to be somewhat relevant and still pay homage to the catalog, because all the Steppenwolf fans, there was a greatest hits CD. There's every single song on it is a hit. When I was a kid, one of the first records I ever bought was the first Steppenwolf record, mm-hmm. the very first one. And that was essentially their live show. So when the time came to be able to do that gig, I obviously wanted to play. I wanted to keep as close as I could to the original, but John gave me a lot of leeway. There was a lot of newer material, a lot of different things. Some of the biggest gigs ever that I ever played were with Steppenwolf. I mean, we played in front of 247,000 people once.
Whoa.
In Houston, Texas. That's a lot of people. It was with Garth Brooks, of all things. Talk about a weird bill. But nonetheless, that's a lot of people. Come on.
What did you use? What was your rig? Or did you rent as you went on?
Actually, no. This is wacky. I haven't thought about this in a lot of years. I was endorsed by Gibson Guitars back then.
Okay.
And the band was based in Nashville. I lived in Nashville for the better part of 4.5 years. And... part of Gibson at the time were Russian amplifiers called Red Bear. Red Bear amplifiers. And they were these military-grade 6L6, 120-watt behemoth guitar. It's white, four cabinets, the two heads, the whole bit. And with John, it sounded very, very traditional to that. So I used Red Bear old tube amps, these Russian amps, and they were roadworthy. They only made them or imported them to this country, I think, for probably only 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, I remember hearing.
Remember those things? Red
Bears? I mean, I don't know anybody that had one, but I heard about them.
I had them.
Guitar Player magazine had done an article about them and stuff.
So Tech and Red Bear.
Right, right. And the tone controls, I think one of the reasons why they really didn't catch on is the tone controls. But you look at it like it was laid out like a Marshall, only... The tone controls just did not do what Marshall's did.
Right.
But actually, they were a very well-built amp, and I had a
did
lot of...
Did you get any input? I mean, like, we have this Henry and I have talked about this too, is, and I've talked to, I had Bobby Cochran on the other day. And
I love Bobby.
He played with him. And he told me to tell you hi, by the way.
Oh,
and
awesome.
I asked him, I said, was there any input? How did he, like, Born to Be Wild? What was, what did he use? Did they ever tell you? Were you able to find out?
Well, one time, yeah. And it was one time in you know, how we always horse trade guitars and things and road guitars and stuff. I came up with a black Telecaster. And don't hang me, but it had EMGs in it. And I thought, oh, what the heck. But John saw this black Telecaster, and he goes, that's what Michael Monarch played. So that's what he played on the original stuff, was a Telecaster. And I started taking that out on the road. And I, well, funny enough, and I used a Lucille as well. Mm-hmm. I used the big body, hollow, semi-hollow body Gibson. But John loved the Tele, and it really didn't sound like a Tele, but it looked like a Tele.
Did he ever say what amp they used? Was that a Marshall just cranked, or did he use a fuzz tone? We don't know.
Oh, good question. I don't recall, but I know it was a Tele. I know it was a Tele.
We got far. We're
close.
Getting closer. Now we know the guitar. I wrote that down. You got the Tele. Mm. That's very cool. So did now? Okay, like where, for example, with Lita Ford, what did you? How did it change in terms of your sound and your tone and your gear?
Back then, it was everything was. How do we make this really compressed, sort of distorted liquid guitar sound? How do we make that? How do we make that happen in an arena? What I was using, funny enough, full circle, I had two Marshall, the Silver Jubilee amps, which are really kind of sought after. I wish I still had one. I don't have them anymore. And four cabinets. I'd use two, top left, the bottom right. And funny enough, we had this really great sound engineer. And when we started graduating to the arenas, we did every time you see a basketball game or a hockey game, mm-hmm. I played there. Thanks to Lita. She was a great boss. But what the sound man said is we ran a separate amp, really quiet and really clean, and that was mic'd. And then I'd have my normal sound, which was kind of a saturated rock sound. And he would mix a little bit of clean in. And one time I had the wireless on, and I got to the back of one of these huge halls and got to hear it. And sure enough, he brought it up a little bit, and that would bring the clarity, you know, all the distinction in the playing.
Yeah.
I felt that lacking a lot, you know, with a lot of the, you know, the heavy rock players of the day.
Yeah, you know? Well, no, they're playing blown out. But I remember in the studio, they would always take a direct line.
Same principle.
Of the guitar and just have that on a track, whether they used it or not.
Mix a little bit in, you know, take a little
bit.
But
I have to admit, on the live bullets, your articulation is just, it's right on, spot on.
Oh, thank you.
And you're not mixing a clean sound in there, right?
Man, they just threw a 57 up there, I think, and it was pointed towards some speaker. But,
well, I'm gonna play another clip. This is One Way Ticket, and this is some pretty. I mean, everything's clear. You can hear all the notes, even though it's fully blown out, and he's going for it. So let's play this clip real
cool.
quick. I mean, you're going to town on there. Now, how do you keep it clean and still keep the game? Is there any technique or any particular thing you do? Because I know a lot of guys, it's hard sometimes. You crank up the amp, you're using a lot of gain,
right.
And you start losing control of it. How do you keep it controlled like that?
Again, I think the first line of anything to play that aggressive, sort of loud guitar style is really in the guitar. And with the 335... I would always, you know, and I can't tell you, it's the second to largest Dunlop fret. I can't tell you exactly what it is. I'm so not technical with that stuff. But I would have them crowned a certain way that I could get my fingers under them and really have control on the bends and really have really good communication with the guitar and just make sure that my intonation was pretty spot on and I'd be into new strings every night. That was the key.
Mm-hmm.
With a 335, I could string the guitar in about... I had to a lot of times do in like 7 minutes before a show, stretch them, boom, go out, and it would stay.
What's your what gauge were you using?
9 to 46.
Oh, okay. So yeah, you're like extra light, super.
Kind of, you know, 9, 11, 16.
What brand?
And back on the Live Bullets days, I was using DR strings.
Okay.
Since then, I've changed. I'm using Rotosounds now, but back then, it was just something that I could get low D. You know, I could just do a drop D every once in a while, and the guitar wouldn't totally flub out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why I wanted a little heavier bottom.
How did you keep the guitar, especially changing all the time, every day? How did you keep it in tune? How did it stay in tune? Just stretch them, or did you?
You know, I
or it's just the guitar.
It's a great guitar, first of all, very very stable, and I'm really fortunate to have it. And it's fallen over. It's survived the airlines. It's done just about everything for me. And that particular instrument was just a good piece of wood. You know, it's like I say, you got to have a good piece of wood in your hands. Yeah. That guitar is. That was really it. You learn how to wind the strings properly. And I would use the old style gears. There was nothing locking on that guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Just wind them around, lock them. You know, pull them 4 or 5 times, get it in tune, and rock and roll.
That was it.
That was all.
Now, you mentioned that you prefer the trapeze, mm-hmm. the trapeze tailpiece, and that you think it has a... tell us more about that, what you found in your playing.
Well, you know...
Because a lot of guys I know like the stop tailpiece.
The stoppers are great, but I came across this guitar, and this was part of, you know, a little bit of my trying to reinvent myself mm-hmm. after the 80s, mm-hmm. you know, the era of the pointy guitars. Which, funny, it's back. It's back now. like a herd of turkeys, it's back. But, you know, trying to be a gun for hire and, you know, and eventually become a solo artist, I had to really reevaluate, you know, my tone and where I was coming from, what really was my love. And I was lucky enough to hop on, it's a 1972 345. I'm a huge Freddie King fan, first of all. I mean, Freddie King pretty much changed my life. I saw him do a guest spot with Eric Clapton when I was pretty young, and whoa, that changed everything. And I saw, what was that tone? What was he doing? So I had an opportunity to get this guitar, which I still have, and it's under my bed, and I love it. And I got this sound, and I had to figure out how to manipulate this sound. How do I, you know, get away from the Floyd Rose and feel what was my first love, which is really the blues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just really communicate with the instrument, and that guitar helped give me a voice. And then eventually I got into the 335, and there was really no looking back after that. It really, mm-hmm. really helped me. And it's a big sounding guitar. Getting into the trapeze, I'm getting off track here, but the trapeze played through a big amp, a loud amp, something that's pushing a lot of air.
Mm-hmm.
If you have pretty good control over it, technique-wise, man, that it has this upper mid-range thing. It's a big sound, but it really seemed to work in the trio format, which is
you didn't have any problem losing sustain with the trapeze, because that's the only thing I've ever heard, that the stop gave you more sustain.
You know, yeah, it does. It doesn't make sense, does it? But for some reason, you know, when you just got that right marriage with the amplifier and the guitar, well, I'm not going to say it plays itself, but it really helps you. It helps give you a little mm-hmm. bit extra push mm-hmm. over the cliff, you know. And I came onto this thing, and even if it was a rent amplifier or whatever, I generally made it work with that particular guitar.
Mm-hmm.
It helped define
the difference between your 335 and your 345.
You know, one had the Nashville bridge, and one had the Kalamazoo bridge. You know, the little different mass on the bridge.
Oh, okay.
And I liked it was a real narrow neck. It was a small neck. And a lot of guys just didn't like it, but I just got used to it for some reason. And of course, the pickups, you know, they're a little bit different. Of course, the one has the varitone on it, mm-hmm. which is kind of nice if you want to get that kind of snarky sort of out-of-phase sound. The Peter Green sound, I could get that.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful. But that was, I just got lucky, and they're both stock. I don't do anything to them, but I'll tell you what I had to do every couple of years was change the bridge. They would kind of arc a little bit. You know,
really?
They would the metal would actually give. It would go the opposite radius of the fingerboard, and everything on the guitar had to be right. The truss rod had to be, you know, adjusted correctly so you could get the right sustain. Boy, we're really getting geeky here now, right? I mean, we're getting off in it.
Well, but that's important. That's part of the sound.
And that's all those little elements contributed to it. But I was never one to change pickups out on these instruments or switches or pots or anything. All I did was replace the original parts with more original parts. And Gibson really got it right back then. They really did.
They were well-made guitars.
Yeah.
No, they were great. Now, you've evolved now. You're using a whole new set. Let's talk about your current set that you're using with the Trifecta Band.
Cool.
Go ahead.
What happened was I wanted to – my 335 was getting so road-worn. I mean, after 5-6 fret jobs and just carrying it on and off airplanes and stuff, I said I really wanted an alternative. So a friend of mine introduced me to the Godin guitar people, and they were making a guitar – well, they still are. It's a great guitar called a Montreal Premier. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, I used that a lot on the Trifecta record, and it's just a – it had a Bixby. I wanted a Bixby on it. I felt that that gave me sort of that trapeze, tailpiece sort of sound. Mm-hmm. And yet it travels easily. It's super well made. It's got this chambered body. Mm-hmm. And their stock pickups are just wonderful. You know, Robert Godin really got it right on that. And I started working with Godin. And then we got to talking a little bit more, and I said, well, you know, I'm having a little trouble with the high access, mm-hmm. playing up high with the way that guitar is constructed. They said, well, we're on this new thing right now. Why don't you try it out? So it was at the NAMM show last year, and I started playing their CT Customs, which, well, how would you describe the shape, Jeff?
What
would you
it's say? Kind of a Les Paul shape.
There you go. Okay, you said it, I didn't. All right.
That's fine.
And I had them. I had some input on this one, and they did a couple things that I like. They put a real proper Bixby on it, and we had some locking gears and some input on the fret wire and how it was constructed. Mm-hmm. And just a great solid piece, and it sounded really great. And they'll put Seymours in it, Seymour Duncans. Mm-hmm. I have a 59 and an El Ninco too in the neck, mm-hmm. and. It just sounds cool.
Now, have you ever used the Montreal Premier Live?
I have on some Trifecta gigs, yes.
Because I see it has a tail, it has the trapeze tailpiece,
mm-hmm.
and it's basically a single cutaway of your 335.
Right.
Now, how do you like this? I know that's chambered. This the Summit is right. chambered, but is it? Are you able to do the things that you did on your 335 with this guitar?
You know, I'm kind of trying to embrace a little bit of change. You know, I like the Bixby. I like the whole thing. I can still get the feedback points. But it seems like with the Trifecta, with the Trio, it just seems that this particular guitar really, really sits in well. We have an amazing bass player, Rick Fibracci. Mm. And his tone, forget it. I mean, you don't even have to play when he's playing. It just sounds so good. And melodic and full and the whole bit. This guitar rides right in the right zone for that. So, you know, I didn't have it when we recorded the record, but during the rehearsals in the last couple of shows, it's just been awesome. Mm-hmm. So, you know, trying to evolve a little.
So you're able to do, but you're able to do your feedback and all that stuff.
Absolutely.
No problem.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, I want to ask you more about the Trifecta and writing for the Trifecta, because mm-hmm. it's, for a trio, it's a very full sound. But real quick, just go through this guitar, because I notice you have the Bixby on here.
Right.
And you put the Bixby on, you said it gives you the feel of the trapeze type of tailpiece?
You know, you think it wouldn't. You think it would be a total sustain robber, but it's not. It for some reason... with the strings riding on top of the guitar like this, rather than even through the body or with a stop tail piece, for some reason, just with the tonality that I like I say, we voice a four note chord, and I have some degree of articulation. It just seems to ride right in the mix for me. It just mm-hmm. just all seems to work. The pickup selection. I wanted to have that. Classics. I didn't want it too overdriven. I like the amp to
you're
do,
more
to
of
do
a PAF
work.
Where you get more
Absolutely.
Tone out of the pickup.
Absolutely. I don't want the pickup.
Well, you
to
know, it's interesting because I have a 71 Les Paul with the Bixby that was installed factory, and it's the same B5. It's the little Bixby on there.
Right.
And I don't even have the metal bridge parts. I have the plastic.
You got the plastic ones,
and
ones.
It sustains
Whoa.
Like forever. Ooh. Henry's played it, so he knows.
Sweet.
But it just, you know, it. But I think a lot of it is the weight, because you have that bar on the Bigsby. It pulls the strings down. I think that really helps it a lot, give you a sustain.
I agree. You know, and with a properly set up guitar, that's well made. I haven't found a dead spot on this guitar yet. You know, and just.
Now, did you have him put on those big frets like you had on your 335?
Actually, you know, no. I thought that was such a crutch for such a long time. I thought, I'm going to have to refret this thing. I just got used to it.
So
I got
okay.
used to it. Yeah, I'm okay with just a medium, whatever the heck they want to throw on there. I'm okay with it these days.
Well, tell us real quick. I know you have it written down somewhere. I want to go through the wood, what this guitar is made of, because it's pretty interesting, and it has a lot to do with, I think, the sound of it.
You know, it's a carved maple top, and mm-hmm. they make it out of it's a chambered cedar body, and it's a mahogany set neck. So the whole thing, there's no, you know, bolt in anything. It's the funny thing about it is I thought this was an ebony fingerboard as well, but it's this stuff called Rich Light. Okay.
Oh, wow.
It's some sort of crazy composite that Godin came up with. And I thought it was ebony because the notes just kind of jump off the guitar. It's a very,
well, it's
very
probably dense enough where it's like an ebony. I'm pretty sure it's
that's the feel it gives me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we were messing around with it before the show, and it's a nice neck. It's a really nice, it's very playable, and you can hear it. It resonates without the amp. You can feel it resonate through the
yeah.
body, so you know it's real.
It does vibrate. You can feel it right in the back. You know?
Yeah,
you get a little bit of vibration. It's pretty cool.
So you're using a like a PAF style pickup in it, right? So
it's
Duncan,
low,
a little low,
yeah.
less yeah, and it's giving you more tone.
I'm using what I wanted was something that wasn't, you know, I didn't want anything hot, so. I was talking to the Godin people, and they suggested just a Seymour 59.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we got in the bridge. And this El Nico 2, which is kind of new for me. I've never really used those in the neck. But they balance really well between the two sounds. And yet in the middle position, you can get a really nice sort of almost jazzy tone.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was win-win.
But those are Seymours.
Seymours, absolutely.
Now, are those push-pull knobs? You only have two knobs on there. Are those push-pull, or are they just straight, and then you have a switch next to the tone knob?
Straight up. And what Godin has done is they've, with this little push-button thing here by the tone control, what it does is it's almost, well, the way they describe it is like two sets of pickups in one guitar. It adds, makes the guitar active. And there's a battery and a little circuit in there. And what it really kind of does is boost the mid-range. And I was on a fly gig earlier this year, with this instrument, and of course the back line wasn't exactly, you know, as everybody knows, when you go out and you never know what you're going to get, no matter what you specify. I had some basic pedals, but I found this mid-range boost to be a real benefit. So yeah, it comes in really, really handy. You know, just revoiced.
Is it set up so when you switch to the active, is it the same level or does it actually boost it?
It boosts. It boosts. It gives you a little bit of boost.
So you can use it as a boost.
You can
when you don't have your
You can
pedal.
Get a little push over the hill. Yeah, it'll take it to 11. You know.
Oh, that's great. No, because it's interesting that the active, using the when you roll off on the active, do mm-hmm. you lose highs? Like a normal or like regular?
No, it seems to. Can we? Okay, so here we are. We got kind of a nasty sound. I'm going to turn the guitar out about half, and I put the boost on, which is the active switch. And it's off.
Oh wow!
So
it's noticeable. Yeah.
It'll give you that, and say if I roll the tone down, so I'll just neck position tone all the way down, and then so it's a little bit of a mid-range spike.
Yeah,
you know,
it makes it fatter. It definitely fattens.
So when you got that, when they give you that Roland jazz chorus, when you wanted a JCM 800,
mm-hmm.
you know, you need all the help you can get, you know,
yeah.
on a rock gig. So, you know, because it always happens, you know.
Well, let's go.
Okay.
While we're talking about effects and stuff, let's go through your pedal board.
Okay. From, okay, it's pretty
coming
basic.
In from the guitar, go through the whole chain.
Okay. I kind of do things a little bit backwards, and I go right into the wah-wah pedal, and I've just got a stock Vox wah-wah pedal,
okay.
And it's, you know.
Okay.
pretty simple stuff, into a TS9.
Okay.
And the TS9, I run it very, very... the level is on full. It's decked. The tone knob is about 11 o'clock, and I run the drive about 8:30. So I'm really not using it as, you know, anything more than just a boost.
You're just doing... It's fairly clean boost. It's you're not using any of the distortions.
Absolutely. And so this would be the sound... well, actually, it was on. I didn't know it was on. Okay. Let's get rid of the wah. So it's a straight sound. So that's what that does. So just gives you a little bit extra. The next thing here is really cool. I'm a huge Jim McCarty fan. Remember from Cactus and,
oh, yes,
and Mitch
yes.
Ryder? Well, he had this particular sound, and it was from a pedal called an Ampeg Scrambler. Now, you can't find an Ampeg Scrambler anymore. That was Jim's sound. It was so awesome. Back in the dawn of the internet days, I saw a little ad for some guy. He said, well, I'll make you any pedal you want. I got the schematic. So I took my $100, personal check, sent it away. About 2 months later, I get this over-easy fuzz. And this thing, I mean, it's like, this is Band of Gypsies all the way. I mean, like here, you get the extra harmonic on top. Here's without it. With it. And it's kind of like an Octavia. Only depends on which pickup you play and what position you're in, but it reacts the same way. It really works well with a dirty amp. So, hear the volume down. So that's that. Pretty simple stuff. Super octave pedal.
So you're going low, it's going down.
It gives me the low stuff. The Scrambler clone will give me the high if I need it. You want to get a little psychedelic.
Well, your over easy kind of gives you that kind of Octavia type of feel to it.
Only it's more controllable.
Yeah.
And the line level, it doesn't really mess with your tone too much. And then, of course, you're everybody's favorite. Gotta have it for some of the trifecta stuff. We got some tremolo. It's tap tempo. You can really go a little nutty. And one of my favorite secret weapons is an ancient CE2 Boss Chorus, which is... I mean, you turn it way up.
That used that on the Live Bullets, right?
I did.
Yeah.
I did. And you can go to, you know, Charlie Hunter territory. But then you can also take it to... stuff like off the Live Bullets stuff. So it'll give you a lot of little funny little nuances, just in one pedal, and a little bit of a volume boost too, if you need.
It does actually buffer it.
Gives it a little bit extra. But I see now this I run in the loop. And I have this ancient Boss DD2. Which I really like the sound. You can hear the delay. And then for some of the long stuff.
So you have two of them.
Two of them.
One for short, one for long.
One for long.
Now, let me ask you something. Did you ever, how do you keep the echo from getting too mushy when you play? Because you do a lot of fast stuff and you have the echo on there. How do you keep that on the same amp? What I used to do was... I would take the parallel out. I used to use Fenders a lot, and I would take the parallel out and use my Echoplex and send it to another amp. Did you ever try that?
You know, I never tried it that way. I always found that my life would have been so much simpler back pre-effects loop days. Now, pretty much any, you know, generic effects loop, you know, we'll take these Boss pedals. And it works great. I don't have any problem. Most of the time, I will leave this on. If I want this kind of I will time them. So I can, you know. And if I don't want that.
No, but it stays clear.
I used to
get mushy on one amp a lot.
The repeats build up, you know, when you're in the front of the amp. And I find that it works kind of like you're in the studio. You know, when you want to bring up a little bit of that echo, you know, you use the effects send, that's the way it feels to me.
Mm-hmm.
Using it just like
this.
Well,
it's really controllable and really predictable, but you're not using a lot of repeats, right?
Mm-mm. Just like a quick slap with the trio. It almost sounds ambient, you know?
Yeah.
It almost sounds reverb-esque. And it's just a little bit of slap delay. You know?
Now, you have in the studio, you have a PV Classic 50. Are you using, is there reverb on there?
There's a little bit, and I run just a tiny bit. You would hardly know.
But when you're using like the, we're using the Marshalls mm-hmm. or the bigger, the stuff, we'll get to the Framus in a minute. Do you use any type of reverb for that?
I didn't. Just ran what we have right here on the floor.
Okay. So, but I mean, for live, you just go for the ambience of the room.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. Now, you had mentioned, we had talked about this before, that with the Trifecta, you're using Framus?
Trifecta, I've been using the old Classic 50s.
Oh, you've been using these.
I've been using these, and I have a couple of combos, and they're, I think they're early 90s. And here's the thing. We back when I was playing with Lita, we went through Mississippi, right? Mm-hmm. And we went to the PV factory, and I met this designer, James Brown.
Mm-hmm.
James Brown. Only
no relation.
No relation. None at all. But James started making these amps called VTMs, and they were the first amp that you could kind of modify with a lot of mods that guys were paying a lot of money on their Marshalls to get them done. And I just started hearing things the way that James did. And later on, so I started using those for the whole, with Lita, we did like 11 months in a row, just everywhere. I was using those amps, bulletproof, they work great.
Mm-hmm.
James eventually wound up designing the Classic Series amplifiers. So club amps, smaller room amps, they're great. They're like the size of a Super Reverb. They work great. The clean channel's really good.
Mm-hmm.
The dirty
So this is set up like a Super.
Exactly. And it gives me the same sort of characteristics as a Super.
Mm-hmm. No, Henry, what were you going to say?
I think it has an overdrive channel.
Yeah, but I mean, in terms of the way the power supply, as we know, the Fenders are set up, it's set up like a Super Reverb, and it's 410s. So, okay. That's.
And I'll tell you, the thing about the 410s is that it really sounds, to me, it's voiced very similar to a 4x12 cabinet. It gives me that kind of a feel, even, you know.
Yeah, it has a very deep, full sound, more than like a typical Super. But
Right. And I have a couple of these combos, and then I have a 50-watt head, the same thing, only in a head. And I actually found a Classic 100, which is 8 EL84s. Oh, Lord have mercy. It costs a lot to feed that beast.
Oh, so these are EL84s. These aren't 6L6s.
EL84s.
Oh, okay.
And I find they're giving me more of that sort of Marshall-esque, well, I hate to be typical, but that British sound. That's what I like, you know.
Yeah, no, the it's interesting because, yeah, it gives you that sound for such a...
It's a small amp,
it's
yeah.
It's not a Fender. Well, I'm going to play a clip from Trifecta.
All right.
This is called Stumble, and this is this amp, right? And you're using the Montreal Premier, if
correct.
I'm correct on here. Here's
yes.
Stumble. That's great. And that's just the amp cranked. You're pretty much playing straight.
That's straight in. And as a matter of fact, that's the one song on the record that we used. We cut that live right off the floor. There's no rhythm guitar, nothing on that. And I want to shout out to Rick Farabracci and Ray Brinker, an amazing drummer, and our Trifecta gang.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing musicians, and I'm so glad that we've thrown together and been able to make this record.
Well, now, real quick, because we're getting close, we're almost out of time. The in writing for them, I wanted to ask you about that, because these guys are, I mean, they're they're doing a lot of stuff. And again, this is a trio, so it's just guitar, bass, and drums. And in terms of approaching it like what you did in Live Bullets, mm-hmm. how did you change in terms of the writing and your playing to, because this is a pretty full sound. Yeah. Also, the Live Bullets, the virtuosity was killer too. But I mean, how is it different in terms of how do you approach it as terms of playing and trying to fill it out?
What it really was when I got together with Rick Farabracci, and we got together, we instantly clicked. We clicked musically in a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. And writing-wise, you know, we wanted to do some, for lack of a better term, a progressive blues sort mm-hmm. of experiment kind of thing. We wanted to keep one foot in the blues, and we wanted to keep the rest of it just rocking and be able to play fusion. I mean, there's nothing that those two guys can't play between Ray and Rick. It's you got to hang on. It's the most awesome feeling ever. And so what I'm trying to say is, writing-wise, you can't write chemistry. It just happens. And we have enough material for probably two records right now, the way everybody's so prolific and the way it comes together so easily. That's almost scary. But it does, and they're wonderful.
Because you're soloing and you're doing stuff on the album, and they're just solid. I mean, for one bass player, I mean, yeah, they can do chords, they can do different little tricks and stuff, but it's not busy, but he's doing a lot.
A lot of melody.
And it's pushing it. So while you're doing your lead on top of it, it's solid, and that's a gift. I don't know. That's not easy to do sometimes.
My brother Rick has the gift, and between the tonality and the musicality, and not to mention his chops as a mixer. Forget about this incredible musicianship. I mean, the guy's got ears. You know, I remember at the Gun Club, I was hanging out with Joel Hoekstra, mm-hmm. wonderful guitar player, right? Well, Rick had played on a couple of his records as well, and so we both had, you know, our Farabracci stories about how, oh, well, that's a flat four, don't hit the flat four, you know. We're rock guys, right? And you know, and Rick has ears like unbelievable, and yet he can rock like a mofo.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
He's just, it's incredible. And the album, which is called, is it the Trifecta, a triple threat, or a triple threat?
The band is the Trifecta.
Right. And the album is a triple threat. Yes, I want to mention that. Can you get that pretty much everywhere?
Everywhere. It's on all the online things and at my site.
Okay, yeah. And then also the Live Bullets is where can you get that? Is
iTunes, that the whole bit. And yeah. Amazon.
Those two albums must thing. Have. You yeah. must have those. And quickly, let's mention really quickly where the Trifecta is playing.
We have a gig. Oh. We got a gig. We're going to play at this cool place in Westlake. Bogies on the 15th, and it's an early show, and guess what, kids, it's free. So it's not like when we're playing at the Baked Potato and everybody calls up, hey, can I get in for free? I'll put everybody on the guest list for this one. Come on down. No, it's really cool. The production is supposed to be really a lot of fun and a real pro place. We're looking forward to that. We're playing this Thursday, and I have a solo gig I'm doing November 1st, singer-songwriter thing. Talk about mm-hmm. getting out of your comfort zone. And then we're at the Baked Potato, again, the Trifecta, on November 12th.
November 12th.
Yeah, come on down.
No news yet on you guys going back east?
We're talking about Europe. We got some European offers, and I really think that's the place for the trio to go.
Okay. And bring your hard drive when you play
absolutely.
That club.
I'm telling
that's
you.
That's a must.
You don't leave home without it. I'll tell you.
No, yeah. Anyway. Okay, well, that's cool. And check out www.stevefister.com, and you can get all the information on Steve and the Trifecta. Any other, and then the Facebook?
Oh, yeah, sorry, we got the Facebook. What is it?
You got there is a the right. Trifecta. Is it the Trifecta Band or the?
The Trifecta Band with a hyphen.
Yeah, with the hyphen.
Facebook don't, page. Don't like us, like us.
Don't forget the hyphen and press the likes. The agent likes the likes.
And then check out Steve. He has his own Facebook page, too. And both of them will keep you posted. And we'll be posting stuff on the All About Guitar, too, of the gigs.
Awesome.
I'll try to keep posting all of that stuff. Check all this stuff out. It's really cool. Now, what we're going to do... we're almost ready. We're almost out of time. We're gonna have Steve play. He brought in a rhythm track for us, and he's going to play along. But I want to, before we start, let's kind of set this up.
Okay.
Because you're using a Dan Electro on this, and it's tuned a different way. So I wanted you to go through a little bit what you're going to be doing.
On the record, the Triple Threat record, we had the great Jerry Vivino play a baritone sax. Mm-hmm. And, well, the tune's called Barry Blues, and I played this Dan Electro guitar tuned to B. So the basis of the song is in with a baritone guitar in B, and the solos are all in standard guitar. So I'm going to do the Steve Howe thing and bounce from guitar to guitar.
Yeah,
and
he has it on the stand. I'm going to take a picture of it. So you go back and forth between the two guitars.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Anything special that you're going to be using on the baritone tuning? Is it just straight?
Straight up, just like you would turn on a normal guitar, except that it's just...
Okay, so you're not using any special pedal or anything like that on there, so it'll be pretty much straight.
Straight up.
Okay, before we go, thanks again for being on the show. It's really cool, and we just scratched the surface. I really want to, and I want to thank Lori for coming down to... I know she's been quiet sitting in the background and shooting pictures, but she helped put this whole thing together, too. And I really want to thank her. And Henry, thanks for coming down. It helped. He helped me set up everything here,
awesome.
Too. So that was pretty cool. So this is the Barry Blues in Barry Blues Radio, I think, is the full name of the cut. And this is on the Trifecta Triple Threat. And he's going to be playing the guitars live with the rhythm track. So, okay, everybody have a great week, and we will see you next week.
Thanks, Jeff. This is awesome.
Thank you.